Could it be that our health freedom is truly under fire? Is it possible that our public health officials have been lying to us? How do we seek the truth when doctors have been led to believe in the marketing slogan that vaccines are safe and effective? This show will highlight the importance of informed consent. I'm Dr. Paul Thomas, and welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors and Science Under Fire. Paul here. Welcome to our next show. This show today features an interview I did with Greg Glacier. He's the legal counsel for PIC. He covers some important legislative issues and the control group study. You're not going to want to miss that. We then go to an interview I did that's just heart-wrenching from a dear friend, Paula, and her daughter, Faith. We're then going to have an interview with Brian Hooker, who did the other vaxxed unvaxxed study that was just published this last year. Very similar findings to my own. And of course, you're not going to want to miss the news update with Bernadette Pagier. So on we go now to my interview with Greg Glacier. Welcome, folks. It's my privilege and honor to bring to you Greg Glacier. He is the attorney legal counsel for PIC, Physicians for Informed Consent. It's an organization I was a part of at the very beginning a few years ago. And he's going to bring to us some extremely important information about something that I would call the control group, but I'll let him explain more how that came about and what that is. Go ahead and maybe give us a little bit of background, Greg, about how you got involved with the litigation that you're involved with and this control group data.
Of course. Thank you so much. This is great to be here. And I'm a huge supporter of your work, Paul, and this show. So the control group is a survey of unvaccinated Americans. And the survey was prepared specifically for litigation and only for litigation. And we have filed a federal court case that seeks to obtain a court order to protect all Americans from mandatory vaccination, as well as any coercion, any discrimination based on vaccination status. And the reason why, other than, of course, the law and ethic of informed consent by itself, a very good reason to support that rule, but the reason why is because our findings, our survey findings, are that the unvaccinated are the healthiest people on the planet. These individuals, they hardly have anything. And and we asked for their medical diagnoses, you know, their professional medical diagnoses. And what we found is that the rate of chronic illness, just having one chronic illness in an unvaccinated individual is about 5%, but it's even lower if you take out all the individuals whose mothers were vaccinated during pregnancy, all the individuals who, you know, got the K shot, then it goes down to about 2%. So if you compare 2% of the unvaccinated, so meaning that if, so let's say hypothetically you had 100 unvaccinated individuals, there'd only be two of them that have one chronic illness.
Wow. And what's the rate in the rest of the population?
It's over 50%.
Right.
So could you imagine flipping a coin 100 times and it only comes up heads twice?
Right. That doesn't happen by chance.
Exactly. So our court documents emphasize that the exact probability of that, which is called the p-value, the probability value. And what we found is that it is a number with so many zeros after it, that the likelihood that this could just be by random accident, that the logic is showing causation.
Right.
Meaning causation in a court of law, that
right.
Vaccines are causing chronic illness.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they always say association doesn't mean causation, but when you get the power, the significance level that you're finding in your survey, which, as you know, is very similar to what I found in my published real world data from my practice.
Yes.
And so it's almost uncanny that these two things, these two major studies are coming out at the same time. And this is really, really important information for the world. Folks, this is why Against the Wind, Doctors and Science Under Fire is here for you, is to bring you this kind of data. I'm wondering, Greg, if you have it in front of you, rattle off a few of the findings from that survey.
Sure.
It's quite impressive.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in our pilot survey here, what we found is that the risk factor of being unvaccinated, having one chronic illness, is 5.97%. And compared to chronic illness in children, you know, that very high number. So that's one in 84 with 83 zeros after it. And then you also look at other things that really amazed us. For example, in the American population, 10% of people have diabetes. But in our control group survey, we found zero diabetes. Zero.
Right.
The likelihood that that could be by mere accident is 1 in 64 with 68 zeros after it. I mean, we're talking about getting hit by lightning multiple times. That's the p-value.
Yeah. And folks, there's sorry to interrupt you there. There's a reason that vaccines may well be linked with things like diabetes, because diabetes type 1 in particular, we know, is autoimmune, right? You have the immune system attacking your islet cells in your pancreas, you stop making insulin, and there's nothing that triggers autoimmunity more than aluminum and vaccines, for one reason. Anyway, carry on with some of the other findings. It's fascinating because it matches so well with what I found.
Absolutely. And the very scientific point that you just highlighted about diabetes, we included in our court papers, where we show that diabetes is immune mediated. It's an immune mediated disorder.
Right.
And so we submit that scientific evidence to the court, and all of our scientific evidence that we present to the court is authoritative. So we're relying on the most authoritative citations, the top journals, the CDC, et cetera, because the court has to recognize the authoritativeness of that evidence.
Yeah.
In addition to our, then of course we have our pilot survey evidence, and you are right. One of our experts actually specifically cited your recent study, Paul, and goes into how it is useful and corroborates this pilot survey evidence and the strengths of it. And so that sort of corroboration, the fact that independent doctors, independent physicians are going out and everyone's finding the same thing. The unvaccinated are the healthiest people. And
right.
Not by a small bit, by massive amounts.
Massive amounts. Greg, this is so important. And for our listeners, most of the world, at least in the United States, we're vaccinated. Most people are. And so this control group that we're calling the control group, that group of unvaccinated people, in fact, do you have a number, Greg, for what percentage of the US is unvaccinated? Do you know what that is?
Yes. What we did is we went in and did our best to estimate the exact number of people that would be completely unvaccinated. And we came to about 0.3% of the population is
0.3%.
Completely unvaccinated.
That's three. Let's see. Would that be 3 out of 1,000?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is why, folks, your regular doctors, your typical pediatricians, they have no experience whatsoever with the unvaccinated population. And this is a situation that I found myself in, this real predicament, because most pediatricians are kicking families out of their practices who don't want to vaccinate. And they're coming to my practice because we honor informed consent. And after that process, they may choose not to vaccinate. So then I found myself, the data that I ended up publishing, with over 500 unvaccinated children, followed, you know, over a period, we were open for 10 and a half years, that data set. And nobody else has that kind of data. And when that was published, I think it was so shocking to the establishment and those who perhaps stand to lose a lot of money if we upset the apple cart of vaccination is safe and effective, which we're now clearly showing that not to be the case.
Correct.
And then 5 days later, the medical board yanks my license on an emergency basis. You know, there's might be a connection there, but back to your story. There's something happening in February 22nd, I believe. Can you let us
yes.
know what's going on?
Yes. I will be in court with my co-counsel, Ray Flores, in federal court in Sacramento. And we will be asking the judge for a court order to protect all Americans from mandatory vaccination, to protect all Americans from coerced vaccination, to require that all governments, federal government, state government, anyone who receives federal funding, nobody can discriminate against you based on your vaccination status. So it's really upholding the right and ethic of informed consent.
This is so, so important, Greg, because, you know, state by state, legislators, you know, funded by pharma money and this sort of initiative just to ram vaccines down the population's throat, basically. Yeah. You know, you're in California where basically they were already successful at, you know, you have to have a medical exemption is the only way to get around following the entire CDC schedule, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I know
to go to school.
To go to school for kids. And, you know, if you're working parents, which most families these days, you've got two working parents, if their kids can't go to school, what are they going to do? So these mandatory vaccine laws are actually discriminatory on the poor or the working class. You know, if you're wealthy, you can hire a nanny, you can homeschool, you can take care of your kid, no problem. So it's odd to me that in a society that is trying to uplift individuality and equality, that we would be discriminating particularly against those who are underprivileged.
I completely agree. And I love the way that you put it. The one of the plaintiffs in my case is an amazing child. This is a honor student, all-American athlete, coaches love him, receives awards, other children love him, gets to play baseball in his court. Just the kind of American that you would just be thrilled to see that this person exists. This boy, because of California law, is unable to attend either public school or private school. He's unable to go to, he's a Christian. He cannot go to Christian school and have fellowship with other Christians. And yet, under California law, somebody can go to a strip club. So we're allowing people to go to strip clubs, but you can't fellowship as a Christian? I mean, to me, this is like persecution.
Greg, you're trying to tell me that you can go to a strip club if you're not fully vaccinated?
Yeah.
Yeah? Wow. I'd never thought of it quite that way. Yeah, I'm having to laugh. It's so obnoxious.
It's so absurd. Exactly.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Yeah, this idea that the system singles out these school children and prevents them from accessing an education. It's just blatant coercion to try to vaccinate as many people as possible. And that was actually a problem for our survey. We couldn't even find an unvaccinated person in West Virginia.
Not a single one.
I'm sure they're there, but they didn't respond to our survey.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we were asking, and our survey is a little bit different because it's prepared for court. So when we do our survey, we're saying, will you testify? We are going to submit your evidence to court. So in many ways, the survey participants are like witnesses. Right. Whereas in your work, Paul, these are, you know, these are patients.
Sure. And every single patient, we didn't exclude a single person. We took every person born into my practice. And then we just looked at the outcomes and we found, we also did a unique thing that we looked at the severity of the conditions by looking at office visits. So the relative rate of office visits, and that's just an example. Let's say you have ADHD or you have asthma and you want to see, well, oh, this child just came in once a year, not very severe. This child was in 12 times for their asthma or their ADHD. It just speaks to severity. And we found this direct correlation in almost anything we looked at. The more vaccines you had, the greater the severity of the conditions which we were looking for. And we looked at everything.
Absolutely. You know, that's a wonderful metric to look for severity. Another key one is the number of chronic diseases that an individual has.
Yes.
And what we found with our unvaccinated control group is that not only are they less likely to have even one disease, if they do have one disease, it's usually mild and just one.
Right.
And so these are individuals whose immune systems work. And so what's amazing is what we're finding is that these unvaccinated Americans, even if they get a disease like measles, for example, they're actually more likely to live. They are more likely to thrive and live.
Right.
And so it overturns the apple cart. It changes the whole way that we view infectious disease. There's sort of this big push, I think, to sort of downplay these diseases, say, oh, well, measles isn't so bad. And on some level, that's true. But on another level, it kind of is difficult for the vaccinated, but not the unvaccinated. They're doing amazing. In fact, when they get the measles, they have statistically a different outcome than the vaccinated. That's what I believe the data shows.
Yeah. Well, it's been my experience, Greg. In my practice, I keep finding that my unvaccinated patients are never sick, which is, of course, what the data showed. And so this narrative that you need your vaccines to protect others is actually totally wrong. Our unvaccinated patients are protecting society much greater than the vaccinated, who carry all sorts of diseases. They're always sick. And so they're always sharing germs. Remember, folks, vaccines cover 14 conditions. That's it. There are hundreds of things that infect people. And so it's actually your unvaccinated populations. They're your heroes. They're the ones who are protecting society. And you don't get that until you understand this data and understand what you've found, Greg, and what I've found in my work. It's just...
it's so powerful.
It's powerful data.
It brings you to a place in your thinking, in your logical thinking, where you can almost look back in time. The unvaccinated, it's like they live in the 1950s when everyone was healthy. You know, it's like, imagine you're on a block with 100 people. There's 100 people on your street, and only two of them have a chronic illness. Could you imagine that? That's beautiful.
That's how it was when I grew up, Greg. My entire childhood, I knew of one kid with an inhaler. One. My whole childhood, never saw asthma, never saw ADD, ADHD, or autism, none. Eczema, none. I mean, we had some infectious diseases back then, measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox.
Yeah.
And we, by and large, got over them. Yeah.
It's remarkable. And I think that's the compelling reason that a court can come in my case, and rule in our favor, because we're asking the judge to just bring us back to that beautiful time period in the 1950s when we weren't injecting these children with all these vaccines. And I think for the first time, the adults are starting to realize that the needle isn't pointed just at the children. The needle also points right back at them with COVID.
Yeah.
And so there's this awakening happening.
Right. Yeah. And folks, you can't wake up too soon. This COVID train is coming to a town near you in the next weeks or months for sure. And you hear the swords rattling that they want to mandate these in such a way that if you don't get vaccinated, maybe you don't travel. Maybe you don't get to even go to work. What kind of restrictions? So this is why your lawsuit is so important, Greg. How can people support you? What should be a next step for folks?
Sure. I've received just wonderful support online and great press from folks, you know, who have reviewed the evidence, lots of offers to help. I'm overwhelmed and grateful. People can follow updates at informedconsentdefense.org.
Wonderful. Informedconsentdefense.org.
Yes.
We will definitely get a link for you for that. And Greg, I can't thank you enough for bringing this important information to our audience. Do you have any parting words of wisdom for our audience?
Thank you for your work, Paul, because you've been a trailblazer in this field, and you have successfully tapped into the thing that can help heal our nation, which is the unvaccinated natural immune systems. We can return to a brighter future.
Thank you for your attention. And Greg, thanks for coming on and informing us about what you're doing. This sounds like the most important thing we can do is put a halt and an end to this mandatory vaccine crusade that is absolutely destroying health.
Yes. Yes. I think change is on its way.
Fantastic. I really appreciate you coming on the show, and let's talk again soon.
Thank you.
So welcome to our studio. I am honored and privileged today to have special guests. We've got good friend Paula and her daughter Faith. So I'm really grateful for you both being here today. You brought your mom along just for fun?
Yes.
Yes. I understand that you have a special way of doing greetings. I forget what it's that called.
The back.
We could do soft cheeks. Oh, thank you. That is so sweet.
That means you're okay.
I'm okay today. Mm-hmm. All right.
You're good.
Well, you're definitely okay too. So what's your favorite thing to do, Faith?
Is whisper into mom's ear canal.
Oh, whistling into her ear canal?
Whispering.
Whispering into her ear canal. You want to try that? Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. I love you too.
Oh, that's so sweet. Oh, I know something's happening special in your life. You've got a birthday coming up, right?
Yes.
How old are you going to be?
21.
21?
And I'll go Harry Potter World.
You're going to go to Harry Potter World?
Yes.
That's wonderful. Anything else you wanted to tell me?
I want to go on Harry Potter slide.
Oh, they have a slide? A Harry Potter slide?
Yeah.
Is it like a water thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you wanted to go have some more snacks, that would be okay.
More snacks.
Would you like that?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
You can go have snacks.
We'll let you go have some snacks.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for coming, Faith.
Should I stay where I am or should I come over here?
Come over here.
You're
right.
So sweet to her.
Oh, she's such a sweet gal.
I know. She brings us so much happiness.
Yeah.
She really does.
She takes after her sweet mama.
Aw, thank you.
So folks, one of the, I mean, you can see, clearly see that Faith is doing amazing, but is challenged. And I wanted a chance for Mom, for you, Paula, to share her story, but not in front of her, because it's just kind of painful for, what people sometimes don't realize is that kids like Faith are actually very aware of what's going on.
She's very in tune with what's going on, and she often actually hears us talking about her from another room. She's listening in and reacts to it. And I don't like to talk, say things that might be upsetting to her.
Of course,
you know,
of course.
She's come a long way. She's had a hard time.
Yeah.
And we like to focus on the positive now.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you do a good job of that. You're one of my hero moms.
Aw, thank you.
So go ahead and share with me, maybe right from birth or even pregnancy, but when did you first start to have concerns?
I had no concerns about her development other than she repeatedly was sick.
Okay.
Just ill all the time. And every time we'd go in for a vaccine appointment, we'd come back a week, 2 weeks later, and she would have RSV, ear infections, just these cycling respiratory viruses and ear infections and multiple courses of antibiotics.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know that's a familiar story. Everybody's got, you know, that's probably like 75% of the people have the same story with multiple courses of antibiotics. And so she was no different than that.
Yeah.
Pretty much the standard.
And was she developing normally for a while?
Oh, totally normally. Yeah.
Until what time?
Until 18 months.
Okay.
19 months, actually.
Okay.
At that appointment, the doctor, my doctor said, you know, we need to get her caught up on her vaccines.
Okay.
Because now she's behind. She's been so sick.
Uh-huh.
She's been sick, 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 and that's true.
She missed some along the way.
Mm-hmm. And so at the, what would have been 18-month appointment, was it 19 months?
Right.
And she got, I think, 9 vaccines in that appointment?
No.
Well, you know, some of them multiple.
Sure, sure.
Like MMR. And
DPT.
Yeah, they have multiple vaccines. Yeah. So it sounds like a lot, but really, it's kind of standard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it was one or two more.
A little more
we
than
had
usual.
One called Comvax, and I don't think they even use that now.
It's... Yeah, those mixed ones were, in my experience, when I was with a practice prior to my own practice, when we went to Combovax, we saw so many more side effects.
Yeah. So within a couple of days, she went from just being sort of sick to checked out.
Okay.
And I was alarmed.
Yeah.
And
when you say checked out, what do you mean?
I mean vacant.
Yeah. No eye contact. Nobody home.
This is where it does get emotional. Sorry. You know, yeah. Because, I mean, I can still feel that and still relive it. I know in our case it was quite dramatic. And I know other parents, you know, report that this went on for a period of months or weeks or something.
It can develop slowly. Mm-hmm. Yours was pretty sudden.
It was very sudden. And so she went from, you know, just sick to growling, chewing her clothes, salivating, howling.
So had she been saying words before that?
Oh, yeah.
Did those go away?
Oh, yeah.
She lost her speech.
Totally. She lost her ability to use her hands. This all happened within like a week.
Wow.
And so I was calling the doctor, of course, asking to get in, and she, put me off, and the nurse told me that brother was probably talking for her, and she's been so ill, oh, give her boy a chance, and this sort of thing, which of course I've heard this a number of times from other parents. This right is nothing unique to me. Mm-hmm. And so I really don't know why I didn't march in there with her, you know, or take her to the ER or something.
Yeah.
But they were assuring me that she was fine. Mm-hmm. And so when I finally took her in, I got an appointment. I think it was, it seemed like everything was 3 weeks. We'll see you mm-hmm in 3 weeks for this and see mm-hmm you in 3 weeks for that. So I took her in, and the doctor's eyes went like huge, like saucers. Mm-hmm. And she thought maybe she had a brain tumor. And mm-hmm or hearing loss. Now, we suspected hearing loss. Mm-hmm. And because she wasn't responding to anything. Her name, right, noises, we'd drop books and huh she wouldn't look.
And did she have hearing loss?
She did have some hearing loss.
She did.
And so that threw us off course for a bit, and we thought, oh, it's just hearing loss and we'll get that corrected mm-hmm and she'll be fine. And we got that corrected, and they were able to confirm that she could hear mm-hmm because there's some kind of test, yeah, they blow air or something into your mm-hmm eardrum, and they confirmed that she could hear normally mm-hmm and yet her behavior didn't change.
Yeah. She still wasn't talking.
No, she was still growling, howling, terrified of everything. She couldn't hardly move. She was clinging to the floor.
Did she seem in pain?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. Probably abdominal pain, brain on fire, who knows?
I know she had abdominal pain.
Yeah.
And her belly got bloated out, mm-hmm, like, distended.
Yeah.
We did end up getting... I guess it was during the pneumonia that they did a x-ray and found she had, I don't know if they, I can't remember, but I know we did separately did a, it's called a KUB,
right,
which is like a...
She was impacted or yeah, full of stool.
Completely yeah impacted.
It's a common thing also.
Mm-hmm. So that happened, but she had liquid diarrhea and then the distended belly mm-hmm and the whole thing. We knew she was in pain,
yeah,
but that didn't really explain the loss of use of her hands. Inability, the growling, yeah, her, I think one eye drooped a bit and her face just became a little bit asymmetrical.
Wow.
I know.
That's huge.
It was devastating.
And you've been working to try to recover her ever since.
Well, she's doing really good.
I know she's doing amazing.
But, it took everything we had.
Yeah.
Complete focus.
No, you've been on, she's almost 21. So you've been on this journey for 20
yeah
years.
Yeah. So I had kind of a showdown, I'd say, with that doctor mm-hmm at some point. Not all doctors are like this. I mean, you're not like this. I've come to realize that if you don't have a doctor that's like a collaborator with you and mm-hmm learning with you about your child or your person, mm-hmm, yourself, if that person is a top-down, like I'm mm-hmm the doctor, mm-hmm, I know this, mm-hmm, you don't know anything, you have no right to ask these questions.
Right.
That person is not on your team.
Right.
That person's going to be a roadblock.
Right.
And I started to recognize that doctor was impeding mm-hmm my progress with
right
my daughter.
Right.
And I don't know if that was because she her felt guilty or knew in her heart that she'd done something or that she just didn't know what to do.
She didn't know what to do. I was one of those doctors who didn't know what to do. I've been doing pediatrics for 35 years, and until I woke up to this reality that you're sharing, which was about 20 years ago,
yeah,
those first 15 years of my practice, I would have said, I'm so sorry, good luck.
Yeah.
Which is basically what pediatricians still
yeah
do today. Go see the specialist. Here's a 2-year waiting list.
Exactly.
See the specialist and good luck.
That's exactly right. So she got us an appointment at the CDRC mm-hmm 8 months out. And I said, 8 months seems like a long way out. And she mm-hmm said, well, this is not an emergency. Mm-hmm. And I said, if it was your child, this would be an emergency. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, there's really nothing we can do at this point. And I'm thinking, is that true? Or are you just telling me that because you don't know what to do? Mm-hmm. So, I guess I come from I don't know if I call it mistrust, but the critical thinking skills should be there for that doctor to tell me maybe there is something we can do.
Folks, this makes my blood boil. I hear this story too many times. Yeah. Hundreds of times I've heard your story.
But I felt like I knew something to do, and she did end up being the roadblock.
Yeah.
I had started, this was pre-internet, really. I mean, yeah. The internet was baby.
Right.
We had email.
20 years ago.
We had a little couple of websites or something, but there wasn't much.
Yeah.
And so I got on the phone. I couldn't leave the house because she was screaming and howling and clinging to me. So I was basically a prisoner in my house. Plus the diarrhea and inability to walk. The whole thing was, like I said, like being a prisoner.
So maybe for our viewers to sort of encapsulize 20 years of learning that you've had, what things can you tell our viewers? These are the key things you should at least consider based on your journey.
Consider as treatment-wise, you mean?
Yeah, what to do.
Okay, well, the first
thing... Or what not to do.
The first thing we did was I just stopped listening to people who said there was nothing you could do, period. What's the downside to trying things if they can't hurt?
Right.
So I had started calling parents and people and just random. Like, we're talking cold calling people. My daughter's having this severe neurological disorder. I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anybody that knows anything about it? Just calling people 2 hours a day I'd spend on the phone.
Yeah.
One person say, no, I don't, but so-and-so knows so-and-so.
Today you would send people where?
Today you'd just get on a Facebook group
and
say, because there's a lot of help now. But right away, I put her on the special diet.
Which one?
Well, at first it was gluten-free, dairy-free.
Did you see a benefit?
Immediately.
Folks, pay attention to this. I hear this story of immediate benefit.
When I say immediate, it was 1 week.
Yeah,
a week
or two or three. But you will see improvement in mood, behavior,
right away,
the GI tract,
right away,
pain.
Yep, all of that. And so, but at first we thought, maybe we're just, it's wishful thinking, so I'm taking data. I'm writing it down. Second week, she was looking at us and smiling. That was the first time she had looked at us or smiled in a year.
Don't miss this, folks.
Third week, she starts imitating sounds. Ba, ba, da, da, da. And she'd repeat it like she's imitating something. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
We were in shock. And that's when I went into this doctor and said, I want to get this baseline blood draw to see if she's having a like an autoimmune reaction to gluten.
Like celiac or something like that.
I want to get a baseline. I want to do this and get another blood draw in 6 months and see... if we see it physiologically as well as behaviorally.
Sure.
And that's when she said, no, I'm just, I'm the doctor. And I basically cut cords with her right then and there and said, if you will pay for it out of pocket. You'll never have to see me in your office again. I'll call for my results and you won't have to deal with me anymore. And she goes, great.
Oh, dear. Well, the key there, folks, is you do get to pick who your doctor is going to be for yourself and for your children. And if you've got a doctor that's not paying attention, it might be time to find a new doctor.
Well, that's the point. So find somebody that will work with you, not against you.
Right.
Find somebody who believes in you and your intelligence.
Yep.
And who doesn't dismiss you and your questions.
Right.
Who's willing to work with you and seek the answers. If they don't know the answers, find somebody who's willing to find it together with you.
Sure.
Or at least look at your research.
Yeah.
So
I imagine your regular doctors would tell you, of course, this was just a coincidence, even though it happened
she
right
afterwards.
She
used that standard phrase,
And so she would probably want
you to... I know you want to find something to blame.
You should probably continue vaccinating because we know vaccines are safe and effective and they've been proven.
Well, by this time, I was done with her.
Okay.
And so I just moved on and somebody recommended you. And I said, no, he's way too mainstream. I'm not going with him. And so we just stopped doing all vaccines and I just started trusting my gut. And I started listening to what other parents said.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that parents that had been before me told me to do or what to trust or what to seek turned out to be the best advice. And including, I started doing a brushing protocol with her where I, did my own at home occupational therapy.
Yeah.
And before you know it, she had what they called tactile defensiveness, mm-hmm. gravitational insecurity, mm-hmm. all these words that nobody's ever heard
sensory
in their life.
Issues that we now call sensory integration issues.
Who would ever hear of gravitational insecurity? That means you're afraid to move.
Uh-huh.
And she was.
Yeah.
And so we had to relearn everything, how to pick up an object, how to be touched, all of it. We had to go back to where it was like she was a brand new infant, like a newborn, where she had to relearn motion, touch, everything.
Yeah.
So it's been a long journey, but I think that people should trust themselves more.
Mm-hmm.
We are intelligent. We don't have to ask permission to seek answers. We don't have to. People are afraid to cut their own hair, let alone diagnose something or treat something. But we have to stop giving up our power and start realizing that we're intelligent, that it's your body.
Mm-hmm.
You have to listen to yourself.
Absolutely. You know? So to people who say that vaccines are safe and effective, what's your response to that?
I don't know what to say to that. Where's the evidence?
Right.
Has it ever been tested against a placebo? Has it ever had long-term safety studies? Which one? If they have been, show me the studies. Where is the evidence?
So you certainly have living evidence of the opposite.
Well, certainly I do.
Yeah.
And it's not just the vaccines, it's the antibiotics.
Yes.
And I think in my daughter's case, there's no question that the cyclical antibiotics, but that were kind of brought on by the illnesses that she got from being vaccinated.
Right.
So it's kind of a cycle.
It's a vicious cycle. My own kids, the same. I had the same story of multiple infections. I just was fortunate enough we didn't have a severe event like yours.
Yeah. Well, the severe event taught me something. The people that don't have a severe event, I think, don't learn as quickly.
That's true. That's true. So parting words to the world, what would you say?
Well, learn what health is. Health is not just an absence of colds or flus. Health is vitality. If you see your health declining, you have to really look at it and say, what is health? I mean, we don't even know. And who's offering health? Is it coming from pills? Is it coming from food? I mean, we have health within us ready to spring forward if we stop poisoning ourselves. So look at what you're poisoning yourself with and ask the hard questions. And who has responsibility for their health? You do. It's not, you don't abdicate that over to a doctor. We've given up our agency, I guess, for health. My parents knew more about how to keep us healthy. They never took us to doctors for this and that, you know, giving us Tylenol and antibiotics and things like this. And I think, you know, it's amazing that we're surviving with all the drugs that we're using and the poisons in our food. So once you stop harming yourself, health just kind of springs forward. And my daughter is extremely healthy now.
Yeah.
She can out hike my husband.
Wow.
She can hike 10 miles.
Yeah.
She's never sick.
Mm-hmm.
Her gut function is now great.
You've healed it.
We've healed that now.
Fantastic.
You know,
the brain is harder to heal, but you're working on it.
Oh, she's come a long way.
Yeah.
She can read, ride bikes, sing.
Wonderful.
She can do basic math.
Fantastic.
She has a lot of deficits, but she brings us a lot of joy.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on our show, for sharing your very difficult story with heart. And folks, your health is in your hands. That's what this show is about.
Yeah.
Against the wind. We want you to know that it is up to you to say this wind that's blowing us over with this mandated vaccines and big food, big pharma, big, you know, pesticides everywhere, toxins everywhere. Take charge of your own health. What it takes to be healthy is a healthy immune system, getting your nutrients and avoiding toxins, pretty much. I mean, a little bit of rest, sleep, restoration, exercise, these things help, right? Avoids undue stress. But pay attention to this vaccine thing. We're not giving medical advice here, but we are bringing information to you that you should probably be paying attention to. So thanks for your attention. I'm Dr. Fall, and thank you, Paula, for coming on our show.
You're welcome. I think we all have to care for ourselves more.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Dr. Paul here. We're going to call this segment From the Heart. If you watched the first show, I imagine you're aware that the medical board in Oregon has suspended my license on an emergency basis. Now, the short story behind that, I wrote the book, The Vaccine Friendly Plan, in 2016. That led to a cascade of events of the medical board. It felt to me like they were kind of after me with complaint after complaint after complaint. January of last year, January of 2019, the complaint that came that time was prove that the vaccine friendly plan, that's the plan I've outlined in my book, is as safe as the CDC schedule. Thinking to myself, well, this is odd. The CDC's never proven that their schedule is as safe as doing nothing, for example. But I took up the challenge because I thought, no, this is a good question, because really, if I'm causing harm with the recommendations in my book, I need to know that. And my families and my practice should know that. So I commissioned a fellow doctor to come in who's an informatics expert, former pediatrician, neonatologist, to just do a deep dive into the data. It showed conclusively with a high level of significance that the unvaccinated are doing amazing in contrast to the more vaccinated kids in my practice. Well, 5 days after the publication of that article, the medical board in Oregon issued this emergency suspension. So those details we shared last show. And I was struggling with having a resentment. I imagine we've all had things, people, situations that perhaps if we could forgive it, we'd be free. I had not forgiven the board or what I perceived to be what they had done to me. And I had a washing. I was reading a book and just it became clear that that was what needed to happen, because actually they were helping me have a greater level of awareness. And I truly believe that. I mean, I get goosebumps thinking about it, that this is actually a good thing. So I am grateful now to the board. And then several family members and a wise friend shared with me another thought at a deeper level. And this was that perhaps you do have some patients who perceived a sense of pressure. You know, I'm so excited about my data. I mean, I'm passionate about it. I want the world to know, because we all want healthy kids. We all want safe kids. We want our kids not to be harmed. And every pediatrician on this planet, I know in their heart, I'm one. We all want to help children. We just didn't have good information when it came to vaccines and what dangers there might be. So I was passionate because I'm seeing this every day in my practice. Well, we got the data published and it's powerful. But in my excitement to share this data and this information and this knowledge and all these things that I've become aware of, I think I have inadvertently had some parents feel some pressure. It was brought to my attention that that was a possibility. And so for the board, I want you to know that I'm grateful, because you also have helped me realize that that was a possibility. And I can do better now. I can go to my patients and make it crystal clear that this is just information and it is always your choice. That's the whole thing about informed consent. I want every doctor you go to give you the option to do what they're recommending or not once you've been given the pros and the cons. So that's what's on my heart. If you're struggling with forgiveness, if you're struggling with a resentment, trust me, if you can find a way to let it go, you're free. I am just goosebumps free. I'm so, so happy to be where I'm at now, a different level of understanding. So what happens on March 4th, which is the other part of the update, that's when I go in front of the board, I'm going to leave that up to God and leave it up to, you know, what it's supposed to be. But I'll know I've done my part to go in front of that board and be honest and thankful and grateful, rather than going in there like fighting. I tend to take on that role more often than I should, I think. So I hope I can come to you with greater humility as well. Thank you for watching, and now on to our show. So welcome, Brian. You are a champion in the world that I'm in, which is this world of trying to get a handle on vaccine injury, vaccine risk awareness. I know you come from a background of having your son having had issues in that area. I kind of got to know you through Vaxxed, the movie. And of course, we're colleagues now in this quest to get data on vaccine versus unvaxxed, because those are the studies that really needed to be done. And I know you just got one published, the analysis of health outcomes in vaccinated and unvaccinated children, developmental delays, asthma, ear infections, and gastrointestinal disorders. So I wanted to give you a chance to share your journey into how you got that data and what you found.
Dr. Paul, thank you so much. You know, we're chipping away at this edifice, these studies that the powers that be have told us couldn't be done or weren't ethical to do. You know, thank God this information is starting to get out. So I'm really, really excited about the interview today. I'm excited by the fact that these papers are getting published, and we do have publishers who are willing to go out on a limb and actually show, you know, what is happening. What are the health outcomes when we look at children who have been fully vaccinated, partially vaccinated, and then those children who are completely unvaccinated?
Yep, absolutely. And for viewers who are skeptical about this, you know, you'll always hear this comment, well, association does not mean causation, right? But it doesn't mean it's not causation. And so when you can show that in the case of studies like yours and mine, that the vaccines preceded the health outcomes that we're looking at, then there's a chance it might be causation. Obviously, you need randomized controlled studies to have, quote, proof gold standard. But when the totality of the information starts pointing to a causation, and it's coming from various sources, and there's a plausible mechanism, which we clearly have now, I think we're onto something. What's your take on that?
Well, definitely correlation does not always necessarily equal causation, but I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater either. And I think that when you look at the constellation of information that's out there, and I've been challenged to look at studies where vaccinated versus unvaccinated populations were compared, and I've seen over 50 different peer-reviewed publications in some way, shape, or form where you would call them a vax versus unvax study. And so we're not talking about just a few data points, and we're not talking about just my paper and your paper, Dr. Paul. We're talking about a body of literature that is showing adverse health outcomes for children who are being exposed to the vaccination schedule, either partially or in its entirety. And so, you know, one of the things that we're not saying, and neither one of us has recommended, that, oh, CDC needs to change its vaccination schedule, we need to throw out all vaccines altogether, we're completely anti-vaccine. All we're suggesting is that more research needs to be done, and randomized controlled trials do need to be done. I dare say that you would be able to get individuals to enroll in such a trial, and you would be able to do prospective studies. It may not be completely blinded, but at least you could do prospective studies, and then you could really get to the basis for this. And I, you know, the information that I have published myself, the information that I've compiled with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. with Children's Health Defense, it all points to a body of literature that shows, yes, there are adverse health outcomes associated with vaccination, and we need to not ignore the elephant in the living room anymore. We really need to look at that, and we need to tie together these mechanistic studies that show how things like cytokine storm can lead to neurological damage, can to lead to organ failure and things like that. And we need to tie all this literature together. And that's, you know, one of the things that I'm hoping that over the next 2 years that I can personally wrap my arms around.
Yeah, well put. I totally agree. We are not saying don't do anything. We're not giving medical advice. We're merely adding to the body of knowledge that clearly vaccines can cause harm. And so we need to look at this more. We need more data. Let's dig into your study. Where did you get your data, just in general? You don't need to be specific. And then how did you analyze it? What did you find?
Well, the data for the study that I completed, this came out in May of 2020 in the journal Sage Open Medicine. The data for that particular study came from three pediatric practices across the nation and in different demographic areas. This is more of what we would call a convenience sample because we didn't pick these practices at random. We picked the practices because the practitioners were willing to have their data mined in this particular fashion. And so we ended up looking only at children who were followed from birth. So they were born into these practices and they were at a minimum of 3 years old when we started to assess different diagnoses. We looked at vaccinations exclusively between 0 and 1 years of age because we wanted to establish a temporal relationship. So the vaccines would happen between 0 and 1 years of age. And then the diagnoses that we looked at, we would only consider valid if they happened after the first birthday and beyond until, you know, the end of follow-up for each particular child. And so by doing this, we were able to establish a temporal relationship. We never wanted an instance where we had a diagnosis before a vaccine. We always wanted the vaccine first and then the diagnosis. So we did this in that particular fashion. And when we did that, we found and these were practices that were friendly to non-vaccinating and partially vaccinating families. And so we found fully in this particular convenience sample, about 630 individuals that did not receive any vaccines during their first year of life. So that was our unvaccinated portion of the study. And then the balance of them, about 1400 or so individuals did receive at least one vaccine in their first year of life. And we didn't, in the initial study, we didn't try to differentiate between the number of vaccines. We just said, look, if you got one vaccine, if you got 21 vaccines during that first interval, then we considered you a part of the vaccinated portion of the cohort. Mm-hmm. And when we did the comparisons, we saw that vaccinated children were more likely to be diagnosed later with developmental delays, with asthma, with ear infections. And then in some instances, this was more of a partially significant relationship with gastrointestinal disorders. And so that piqued our curiosity. I was working with my co-author, Neil Miller. That piqued our curiosity and we did different permutations of the study. And we looked at more vaccines in the first year of life and then also vaccines being given earlier, say before 6 months of age. And when we did that, we saw all of these relationships strengthen. In addition to that, then the relationship with gastrointestinal disorders then became highly statistically significant, especially among those children that were the most vaccinated, received between 13 and 21 vaccines during their first year of life. And also those children who were vaccinated before their 6 month birthday. And so all of these became significant, especially when we looked at children who were highly vaccinated versus those children that received no vaccines before their first birthday. So this was a stark result. We wanted to make sure that the result was based on good medical information and not healthcare, what we call healthcare seeking behavior. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dr. Paul, I know you've tackled that in your own paper. And it's important to correct for the fact that unvaccinated children and families who are less prone to vaccinate may go to the doctor less. And so what we did is we included a control diagnosis of head injury, and mm-hmm. we were to use the difference between non-vaccinating families and vaccinating families and how often they would show up with a diagnosis of head injury, and we found virtually no difference.
Okay. Interesting.
So with our control diagnosis, which was not associated with vaccination, it was more of an injury-based diagnosis. We never saw a relationship, but yet with these other things that have been tied to vaccines, definitely developmental delays, definitely asthma, definitely ear infections, and then gastrointestinal issues, which is a comorbidity a lot of times, with developmental delays, then we saw these relationships.
Yeah. Well done with your study. This cannot be ignored anymore. And I think we're both calling for the CDC, the NIH, and actually every major health plan that has a huge data set, simply look. You go in and find your unvaccinated kids, age match them appropriately, socioeconomically match them, however you wish, and just look at the data. Look at all health outcomes and see what you find. This information needs to be shared. We may need to reconsider. We're not saying abandon vaccines completely. We just may need to reconsider what we're doing, how many, how often. Is there too many too soon? Are there certain adjuvants, like we're worried about aluminum just as we used to be worried about mercury? You know, might there be better ways to do this? You know, nobody's against a safe, effective vaccine. We just need to look at what we're doing, because it's apparent to me in my practice, I'm an in the trenches pediatrician, that our kids are not doing well. And Brian, I know you've published on this data. Kids today are just in trouble health as far as chronic health conditions.
Yes, you know, when you consider it, when you lump in obesity, the latest statistic that I know of, which is now old, is 2012, 54% of U.S. school children had some type of chronic health disorder. Chronic health disorder,
yeah.
And that's up from the 1980s, where about 12% were diagnosed with some type of chronic health disorder. So we are in an epidemic of chronic disease conditions in our children, and nobody wants to see children suffer. And one of the things that has stuck out to me is the overwhelming response that I've had by publishing this paper. The paper has been downloaded off of the website over 160,000 times. And
well
so
done.
I know that, and this is a medical journal, so practitioners are looking at this information. Practitioners care about their patients. They're not just randomly vaccinating children, and they're interested in the paradigm shifting. And the more pressure that we can put on the CDC, on the FDA, on the NIH to do this study, and I know, you know, the gold standard for the CDC is what's called the Vaccine Safety Data Link. I've actually been in the Vaccine Safety Data Link. I was one of the few researchers that was approved to go in before they then took rescinded access to all independent researchers in 2017. And I know that there are unvaccinated children in that database. So they have the data at hand. They could do this study tomorrow if they wanted to. It's just applying the pressure to get them to do this study and to look at what paradigms, what healthcare delivery paradigms are the best for children, are the best
right.
for children's health. You know, we don't want to see children suffer.
So in closing, I know we don't give medical advice here, but your personal opinion, if you will, or what closing tips would you have for viewers who are watching this and go, what do I do with this information?
I would tell any viewer that you need to have a practitioner that will work with you, that will look at the research and help and support your informed decisions as you are making these healthcare decisions for your children, for your elderly parents, now that we're talking about things like the COVID-19 vaccine and the flu shot and the Tdap shot and the pneumonia shot and things that are recommended for seniors, that you need a practitioner that will listen to you and listen to your concerns, and then not just follow, you know, CDC edicts or edicts that are coming down from the state's public health department, or following incentives by pharmaceutical manufacturers to prescribe specific vaccines and specific medicines. There are practitioners out there and that are very, very willing to listen to parents, to talk to families, and to come up with things like alternative vaccination schedules. And certainly, the parent is the person who is spending the most time with the child, okay?
Right.
So parents know their children. It's very rare that you find a parent that doesn't really know what's going on
right.
with the health of their own child.
Exactly.
And so if your practitioner is not following your intuition, is not listening to you as the expert on your particular child, then it's time to find a new practitioner.
Well put, Brian. I am 100% behind informed consent. You, the
Absolutely.
Parent, have the right to choose. This one-size-fits-all medicine is archaic. It's just flat-out wrong. We know too much today about individual variances in our, you know, genetic polymorphisms and what have you, how we respond to various chemicals, and we need to individualize vaccines as we should any pharmaceutical. So that I think is a great take-home tip from the both of us who are, you know, the fellows who published the data that speaks loud and clear that there is a very real possibility that vaccines, at least in the way they're being done today, are a big part of the problem for chronic health in our country.
Exactly, exactly. Well put, Dr. Paul. I support you 100%. As a practitioner, you're on the front lines, and you know you're working with the pediatric population every day. And my hat is off to you for providing that type of safe environment for children and for families to be able to make the best decisions individually for their children.
Thank you, Brian. And you're a hero of mine because you've gone through the fire with your own vaccine injured son. And I know it's just tough. And so you've persevered, and you know, you could just stay home and take care of your child, but you have gone on this mission to help educate the world. So thank you for all the work you're doing. And folks, we're not giving medical advice, just information. Get these studies, and we'll give links to these studies in the show here. And you know, Dr. Brian Hooker, thank you so much for being on Against the Wind and one of my first scientific guests who you've been under plenty of fire. Our show is Against the Wind, Doctors and Science Under Fire. You definitely qualify. So I just want to thank you so much for being on this show.
It was truly my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So welcome to our news in the news segment of Against the Wind. And Bernadette Pager is the public policy director of Informed Choice Washington. This is a nonprofit dedicated to scientific integrity and public health policy, medical freedom, and informed consent. She hosts an Informed Life radio, interviews doctors, scientists, attorneys, and she brings information about vaccination concerns, health, immunity, everything the public needs to know that they may not be getting in your other mainstream sources. So Against the Wind is privileged to have her on our show as our regular source for this segment of In the News. Thank you for joining us, Bernadette.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me and for doing this show. It's so important.
Well, I appreciate your willingness to be a regular feature of this show because you are so in the know and keep informed. You're keeping up better than most. So let's kick it off with, I know you've been scouring the news and a couple things that have been in the news lately. Let's start off with, what have you found about COVID vaccines in children?
Well, that's very concerning because, as you know, the risk of COVID-19 to children is very, very low. You know, we know most of the time they get note of very low symptoms. They recover very quickly if they do get ill. There's some very rare circumstances where children have been, hospitalized and had some poor outcomes, but those are very rare. And so now they're moving into, though, trial studies in children. And I find that very concerning.
Yeah. So as a pediatrician, if I can cut in, that is extremely concerning to me. I have a big practice of 10,000 patients. We've not had a single child hospitalized. In fact, we haven't had a single child walk through our doors sick with COVID. We know of 4 kids who came down with mild COVID symptoms, tested either in the parking lot of our building and then sent home after a brief evaluation outside, or a couple of them were at urgent cares. So we are not seeing severe COVID illness in children. One of the problems with the data and the news reporting on COVID is that because the PCR testing that's so often used creates so many false positives, that we will get these cases of devastated, even deaths. We had a recent report just this, I think the last 24 hours in Portland, of an infant death supposedly from COVID. Now, I don't know the details, but if you have a positive test, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what caused the death. You know, this association being just assumed to be cause and effect has not really been worked out. But sorry, I interrupted you. Carry on.
No, that's I want your input here because you are the pediatrician, and I heard that story as well. And they're very careful in how they word it. They said that the child tested positive for COVID, but the child had many underlying health issues.
Yeah.
So we don't know. And they said they did not know the cause of death. And yet it makes headline news to frighten people. You know, it's
right,
very
exactly
concerning.
And my wife told me about it. She said, oh, there's been an infant who died of COVID. I mean, that's the interpretation from the news report, is COVID killed this infant. Yeah. And we're seeing this with, you know, across the country with all these reports.
Yeah. And, you know, and if you're going to be jumping in to automatically assume a positive PCR test means anybody died of that disease. How about we apply that same standard to vaccination? If a person was vaccinated within the last 48 hours and passed away, why can't we make that same extrapolation, right? It's very
frustrating. And I know you're going to get into the side effects and deaths that were already reported, which we know is just a fraction of what's actually going on. So I think we can sum it up, right, that children are really not at risk. I mean, the Academy of Pediatrics published an article recently in the journal Pediatrics showing that you should open up the schools. There's very little transmission from kid to kid or even kid to teacher.
Isn't that a violation of your medical ethics? When something is not indicated, when a medical intervention is not indicated, you're not supposed to prescribe it. And
we better not mandate it, right?
Right. Well, and the ethics, when you hear them write about it, they're trying to vaccinate the children to protect other people.
Right.
And the ethics of exposing a child to the risk of a medical intervention for disease, they are not at risk of themselves.
Right.
That's
It's very problematic, very concerning to me. And on top of that, we really don't know whether the children who are unvaccinated but getting coronaviruses naturally, which has been happening for, decades, they probably, we don't know, but they might or probably are providing a greater shield to the population than those who end up getting vaccinated and have their immune system just sort of tweaked towards one particular strain.
Exactly.
With the rapid mutations that are happening with these mRNA viruses, this coronavirus, it's not at all clear that vaccination is going to be protective.
No, not at all. Yeah. That brings us, from children, which has got a huge ethical concerns, to pregnant women.
Yeah.
And I want to bring your attention to a post, social media post by the CDC. And it says, is it safe for me to get a COVID-19 vaccine if I would like to have a baby one day? And then they answer their own question, yes. People who are trying to become pregnant now or who plan to in the future may receive a COVID-19 vaccine when it becomes available to them. There is no evidence that fertility problems are a side effect of any vaccine, including a COVID-19 vaccine. There is no routine recommendation for taking a pregnancy test before you get a COVID-19 vaccine. Even if you're already pregnant, you may choose to be vaccinated when it's available to you. There is currently no evidence that antibodies formed from COVID-19 vaccination cause any problem with pregnancy. This is so...
There's no testing either. So this is all presumptions. All vaccines are safe and effective, which is the mantra of the media, it's the mantra of the pharmaceutical industry that's making billions on people's suffering. If we can just call it all safe and effective, then we can just grant that same immunity to the COVID vaccine, which is completely new technology, totally untested for safety, zero testing in pregnancy or children. We'll just say it's safe. It's insanity.
It is. And that is such deceptive language. It's actually breaking laws here in Washington State, our fraud laws. And I'm looking into seeing if we can take some legal action to stop this sort of marketing message. It's so deceptive.
Yeah.
All you have to do is go over to the National Institute of Health. The NIH is telling you the truth, that the manufacturers of currently available vaccines excluded pregnant women and lactating people from the clinical trials. And they say that pregnant people and their clinicians must make real-time decisions now about the vaccine based on little or no scientific evidence that applies specifically to them.
Right.
So I don't know. It's so infuriating to see this public health messaging that is putting our most precious life.
Oh, goodness. Moms, if you're pregnant, you're carrying the future, and you know from common sense, your gut instinct is to protect and not eat toxic food or ingest medications, and you definitely wouldn't want to vaccinate with a completely experimental vaccine, if you can even call it that.
Yeah,
it's insane. What are you learning about the side effects from the vaccines? Because we hear reports, but despite reports of side effects, they all seem to be just sort of getting washed as it's safe. Because look at the numbers of people who've gotten the vaccine, so it must be safe.
Yeah, it is being whitewashed. And I looked at, you know, back at in 1976 when they rushed a swine flu vaccine to market. This is prior to the 1986 Act that gave liability protection to vaccine makers. This is pre-PREP Act, although okay. I think that they had some sort of liability coverage there. But it only took 500 cases of Guillain-Barré and around 25 deaths before they shut it down. They said, we're pulling this vaccine, it's too dangerous. But here in 2020, we've had more than 12,000 adverse reactions reported to VAERS, many of them serious. We've had 653 deaths reported to VAERS. 653. Although the CDC says more. The CDC is now saying there's been 1,170 deaths reported to VAERS. They updated their numbers to say, well, only 934 of those in the U.S., so the rest were outside of the U.S. But they go on to say that they've already looked into each and every one of those, and none of them were linked to the vaccine.
And yeah, how could that be?
How could that be? Yeah,
we know that the VAERS is, you know, the Harvard Pilgrim study showed that it's really only picking up about 1%, if that, of the mm-hmm. actual side effects that are happening. Because when it comes to vaccine injuries, they're just not recognized as such. So
yeah,
we've got a big problem on our hands as far as that goes. I'm curious what you found out about anaphylaxis. So this is where you have this severe allergic reaction. And yeah. I think there have been a couple reports of different types of anaphylaxis.
Yeah, this is really exciting to me as far as I'm a science geek, so I love learning about this, but there's two types of anaphylaxis. They're the ones we're familiar with, IgE, mm-hmm. and that requires prior exposure. You are sensitized the first time you're exposed to something, then you get exposed again, and you have these life-threatening reactions happen. But there's another one that's called complement, which I'd never heard of before. And complement is part of the innate immune system reaction. It does not require prior exposure. So anybody can have this complement reaction. You know, if you're unlucky enough to have all the little, you know, ducks in a row, it can happen to you. And if you go right. to informedchoicewa.org's website, there we have an article that explains this and explains how and why these mRNA lipid nanoparticle vaccines, there's that biological plausibility that the second type is also happening, not just the first
right.
type.
And that would explain why a person could actually die of anaphylaxis, even though they've never had this vaccine before. I mean, we are yes. hearing that the second vaccine is causing a much higher rate of bad side effects.
Yes.
But people are dying after the first vaccine.
Yeah.
And that's one mechanism by which that can happen.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's another mechanism of death that can come into play within hours or days of getting these mRNA vaccines. And it has been posed by Dr. Sin Heng Lee, who's been writing to the FDA, formally petitioning them with his grave concerns. And he's a pathologist with 40 years experience. He knows what he's talking about. And he's been consulting with other scientists and MDs. But basically, he says that the nanoparticles in the mRNA vaccines have this self-adjuvanting property. And they can activate certain toll-like receptors to initiate a series of innate immune responses that are strong and long-lasting. And they cause something called TNFA, tumor necrosis factor. They knew in the clinical trials that this could be happening, and some of this type of response was going to end up in the lymph nodes, and you're going to end up with swollen lymph nodes. They saw that in the clinical trials. And even now, women are being told, if you're going to get a breast exam, get one before you get the vaccine, or wait quite a while after the vaccine, because so many women are ending up with swollen breast lymph nodes.
Hmm. And tumor necrosis factor is one of those really potent inflammatory mediators. And so we know that COVID disease is triggering a lot of inflammation, and it appears the vaccine is as well.
Yeah, so this can travel to the heart, is what Dr. Lee is saying. If this travels to the heart, you could die in your sleep, which has been happening. If you go look at the VAERS report, people are getting the shot, not feeling well, going home. They don't show up for work the next day. And when they go investigate, the person died at home alone.
Yeah.
Many reports of that. And then heart attack within 24 to 48 hours, people going into cardiac arrest. We lost a woman here, 58-year-old woman. It happened that same day. And they're not doing the proper investigation, because what's really frustrating about vaccine injury, because it's an immune stimulant, it doesn't leave a footprint or a fingerprint somewhere to say, aha, it was the vaccine.
Yeah.
You know?
You just have to understand the mechanisms, and thank you for sharing that other mechanism. Massive inflammation. There are a lot of mechanisms, anaphylaxis, as you mentioned, by which the vaccine can literally kill you. Certainly, we're going to be seeing a lot of autoimmunity, and that may take months or years to develop. The problem with treatment of autoimmune conditions is it is very difficult. Once the body is attacking itself, you know, making antibodies against itself, it is really hard to turn that off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just feel like those, when we talked about at the beginning of your conversation, kids and pregnancy, these are people who the risk of triggering anaphylaxis or triggering autoimmunity is just crazy given how mild illness is for children, if they get ill at all, and given the extreme potential risk of your unborn child being harmed if you're pregnant. So folks, This is just information. Please go to Informed Choice WA and check out that website. We'll put a link for that in the show notes. And Bernadette, I think you had one last thing you had found that you wanted to share about ivermectin.
Well, I just encourage people to check out ivermectin as an option, a prevention option and a treatment option. Globally, it is making case numbers, hospitalizations, and deaths plummet wherever it is uptake. And the science is very strong. It's relatively new in the past few months that all of this has been seen. So I encourage people to go to COVID-19criticalcare.com or go to our website and find the links there and go research it. I went to my doctor and he was able to give me a prescription to have on hand just to have. Doctors can do that. You can have it if you need it. And so there are options. This need not be fatal. Dr. Pierre Corey is just, on fire. We can shut this down. Really, the information, the studies on ivermectin are so strong. We can end the pandemic today if everybody embraces ivermectin. Yeah.
I also think if you're not taking extra vitamin D, absolutely do it. I highly recommend getting a vitamin D that has K2. The reason for that is the K2 will usher the added calcium that you absorb into your bone where it's stored like a bank account, and instead of the calcium circulating and causing mischief, which is why, for people who aren't aware of this, so many studies on vitamin D are mixed, because they're taking either tiny doses that are irrelevant, or they're taking vitamin D without K2, and it might be actually causing some harm. So vitamin D with K2, 1,000 IUs for infants, 5,000 for teens and adults. You can start there, check your levels, see where you're at. And I want to thank you for bringing us another impressive overview of the news.
Oh, you're welcome, Dr. Paul. Thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you. We'll see you again next show.
Thanks for watching. I pledge to you to bring to you honest and vital content that's going to help you first do no harm to yourself or to your children. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. This is going to be a show every other week, and as soon as we get adequate funding, we're going to bring this to you weekly. We stand together for medical freedom and informed consent. Only you should decide what's injected into your body. So I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com. Sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.